It's McCown and Shannon on the radio slash podcast program.
So, why don't you just say on our show,
whatever this show, is,
whatever this is. It's funny. I was at a golf tournament last week, and they said, "Well, what are you doing?" I said, "Well, I do a podcast." And they said, "Oh, really? Yeah, you with who? Bob McCown? Bob McCown's got a podcast?" I said, "Yeah." And then I show them how to download it on their phone and everything. And they said, "Well, how would you describe a podcast now?" And I said, "Well, here's what I would describe it as: a podcast is a radio DVR or PVR, depending on what country you're in." Because in the end, you record it and play it when you want. That's what it is. It's like when you record, you know, your favorite television series on your cable box or on your box at home, and then you watch it when you want. And that's what this is now, is you download it, it gets delivered, you subscribe to it, and you listen to it when you want. You don't have to listen to it on Sirius XM channel 167 at 6 p.m. You can go to their website and download it. You can go to Spotify, Apple, and do it when you want, right? So it's a PVR for audio is what it is.
Well, I'm not the least bit concerned about that. I'm concerned more about the fact that you were at a golf tournament.
That you weren't invited to?
And the people you were talking to were clearly more excited that I'm doing this podcast than you are doing this podcast.
Oh, Bob.
But they didn't think enough of me to invite me to their crummy golf tournament.
I played with one guy. Actually, he's a really big wheel in the Sobeys grocery chain. And all he wanted to do was talk about you. To the point where about the 16th hole, I said,
"Now wait a second. His first name isn't Michael, is it?"
"No, it's not Medline. No, don't worry."
"Okay."
And about the 16th hole, I turned to him and said, "Listen, if you really wanted to know what Bob's doing, why didn't you invite him to the golf tournament?"
"Oh, you did say that?"
"Oh, sure."
And what was his response?
He laughed.
He laughed.
Because he thinks that, you know, they like playing with me because they think I'm funny. Not just my swing. They just think I'm funny. So.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, would they like a second opinion?
Well, as I told them, I'm the second funniest person in my own house, so...
There's no doubt about that. Yeah, all you have to do is show one of Mickey's Christmas letters and you'll get the answer to that.
Correct. Correct. So,
and by the way, you should have told the Sobeys guy, if he loves us so much,
we should be sponsoring us.
They should be sponsoring us.
Yeah. I'll get the sales unit on that right away,
Bob. I wish you would. Yeah. if you can find them. Some baseball talk today. Bill Shaken of the LA Times is our pal, our friend, originally a Montrealer.
Yes, sir.
Has been in Los Angeles for a long, long period of time. And we'll talk about, baseball in general. We're not going to focus on the LA scene, although there's stuff going on in LA.
Always.
The latest with Mike Trout is kind of top of the food chain for
baseball. Can you imagine being an Angels fan? Seriously.
No, I can't.
I mean, all they do is stub their toe. That's all they do. They have good players. They go out. They mean they got Ohtani. They got Trout, you know. And all they do is stub their toe. They're just, you know. And then the guys up, you know, I-5 are pretty damn good all the time. And that's part of the frustration, too. Ugly stepchild of Southern California.
I've tried to make this point over the last little while, is that you got to be careful in baseball, because with a 25-man roster, one or two guys makes a negligible amount of difference, except if they're a starting pitcher.
Yeah.
Maybe a closer, but an everyday player, one of the regular eight, very difficult to make a significant impact. And that's why I caution against thinking that Soto is going to be a difference maker for a team going towards the World Series. I like Soto. I like the fact that he's got 2.5 years on his contract. He's 23 years old. You know, there's nothing not to like about him. But if you think one guy can make a difference, that's almost never going to be the case. The one sport where one guy can make a difference is basketball. Like, you go and get Kevin Durant. If you've got some decent pieces around him, he can be a difference maker. And not Durant isn't the only one. There's a bunch of them out there.
Well, what is Kyrie one of them?
Kyrie was one of them.
Was or is?
Well, no longer, I don't think. I wouldn't touch him with a 10-foot pole.
Right.
But that's a personality thing and a trust thing. You just don't know what you're going to get with this guy. Is he going to be happy? Is he going to be willing to play? You know, it's like Ben Simmons. I mean, they got New Jersey. The mistake New Jersey made is they went
Brooklyn.
To Ben Simmons.
You have been calling them New Jersey.
Yeah, or whatever they're called.
Brooklyn.
Brooklyn, yeah.
Come on.
The Nets. They're the New Jersey Nets.
No, the Brooklyn Nets.
Well, Brooklyn ain't that far from New Jersey. I have no idea what that means.
Neither do I, but across the Verrazano Narrows.
Yeah, but look at the two guys they got. Well, the three guys they got. They got Harden, too, who's a whack job.
Well, Harden's gone now, though.
Yeah, I know. Well, Kyrie may be gone, too. He's a nutcase. And then they went and got Simmons.
I thought we were talking baseball today.
Well, you started this.
No, you got us. You got us to Durant in about 34 seconds.
Well, no, I just meant all I said was Durant. You started to get into make a conversation out of it. The only thing about Durant I said was if you go and get one guy in basketball, you can make a difference. If you get one guy on a football team, one guy, well, unless it's a quarterback, perhaps one guy on a baseball team, not likely to make that much difference.
So with that in mind, Bob.
Yes.
Why would you go and you know rape and pillage your own prospects in order to get Soto?
Well, now that's a totally different conversation.
Oh,
We probably should bring Mr. Shaken in here, but prospects is a synonym, in my opinion, for suspects. It is really easy to overrate your prospect list.
Yeah.
The Toronto Blue Jays have two pitchers that they love. One of them has been in Vancouver. The other one, I think, was maybe in Double A, but I'm not positive.
In New Hampshire?
I think. Okay. I know both of them were in Vancouver at some point, maybe at the beginning of the year. And don't ask me their names because I forget off the top of my head. But they would be at or near the top of their prospect list. I trade them tomorrow. If I wanted Soto, I'd trade them tomorrow.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we always refer to Nate Pearson, and not everybody is Nate Pearson. Sometimes guys like Guerrero and Bichette and, to a lesser extent, Biggio, you know, come through the system and become valuable members of your big league team. But for every one of those, there's 5-10 others that you were hopeful for that you never see the light of day.
Do you remember when the Jays had those three pitching prospects in Lansing, Michigan?
Yeah.
So one of them went to the Mets, right? I think in the Dickey trade. And one of them, wasn't Marcus Stroman one of them? Maybe he was. Maybe he wasn't. No, he wasn't. Okay. But there were three of them. And I think only one of them actually ended up pitching for the Jays. And not long enough to make an impact.
Well, none of them pitched for the Jays.
None of them?
None of them. They were all Blue Jay prospects.
Right.
They were
none of them ever made the major.
Well, I'm just blanking on who they were. And I don't know why, but someone will be sitting there yelling at me and saying, you're an idiot for not remembering his name. But there was a significant, a guy who was significant. And I think he still might be around.
Yeah.
Starts with an S, and I just can't think of his name in any event. It happens. Syndergaard.
Yeah, Noah Syndergaard went to the Mets, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And pretty all the good other for one, a while.
And the other one was that in part of that deal that in the end, Alex made for Dickey was Travis d'Arnaud, and because he was supposed to be the catcher of the future, right?
Yep.
And it took... Well, now he is back with Anthopoulos in Atlanta as the starting catcher for the Braves. So
well, if the Blue Jays were to contemplate anything, I think Mourinho is an obvious that he'd be at the top of the food chain, top of the list. You'd have to give him up.
You'd be prepared to give him up after all the talk?
I didn't say that. I said you'd have to be prepared to give him up. I didn't say I would.
But you know, that's who they're going to ask for.
Well, at the very least.
Yeah. Plus.
The Blue Jays are going to want to give up somebody off the major league roster in order to try and compensate for the salary differential, I would think.
Yeah.
And you're not going to give up Guerrero. Are you prepared to give up?
I'm Bichette? Right now. I tell you what. No. I'm.
You got other shortstops in the system.
Yeah, I tell you what.
But that's what's going to take.
No, I understand that, Bob. But I'm not in the Soto camp like you are. I'm not in that situation of, you know what, we control him for, you know, 2+ seasons, and we need him, and we should.
I'm not in that camp at all, John. Don't misrepresent what I'm saying. I'm pointing out that is truth. You do get the uniqueness of controlling this guy for 2.5 years or two years and 2 months without having to worry about paying him $30 million a year. And that's very rare, which increases his value. And that's the only point I've made.
I
think he makes the Blue Jays necessarily a better player.
I don't think.
Where would he play? He'd want Hernandez in the deal for economic reasons and to give him a place to play.
Correct.
But would
I'm not prepared to give him up right now.
What does Washington want with Hernandez?
I don't think they do.
I don't think they want. No, I agree.
They just want kids.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
So, you know, what we've come down to is there's not much of a fit.
All right, for Toronto.
Can we get to our guest?
What?
Bill Shaken is with the LA Times, and we'll talk about this stuff and others when he joins us after these messages. McCarron and Shannon back with you. Bill Shaken of the LA Times is with us from, not shockingly, Los Angeles. Well, I know you principally cover the Dodgers, but you pay attention to the Angels too, do you not?
We do.
Tell us what you know and what you think you know about Mike Trout's situation.
What Mike Trout and the Angels athletic trainer basically said yesterday is what was once a day-to-day issue has sort of evolved into this long-term back issue that, at least from what we could figure out, is not so much that, oh my God, his career is over, but as anyone you know who's had a back issue knows, things can flare up from time to time. And so he has a condition they're going to have to manage, and the trainer indicated probably for the rest of his career. And it looks like you can do that with treatment, but you look at a guy who's now, you know, on the wrong side of 30, as they say in baseball, and hasn't played a full season in some time. And you kind of wonder down the road, you know, how many games is he going to be available for the rest of his contract, which still has a decade to run? And, you know, how productive can he be?
Well, I guess we all make the same assumption sometimes that a back problem is a back problem, and they're all pretty much the same, but they aren't. The question is not just can he play, but can he play effectively? I don't know if you've had a back problem, but I had one for about 15 years and managed to get it cured through laser treatment and haven't had a problem in the last 15 years myself. So I know, but I'm assuming that's not the case here. Otherwise,
you're not playing right field. You're not playing right field.
No, you're right. You're exactly right. So it's kind of a wait and see, Billy, isn't it?
At least with the information that we have right now, I think it is. There isn't a huge history of baseball players having this injury. It seems to the extent that it's prevalent in sports, it's in other sports. So it's kind of a wait and see thing, but initially it was a day to day thing, at least the Angels thought. And you know, now it's evolved into a stint on the injured list, into, well, he won't be ready when his time is up and he's eligible to come back. So the Angels and their fans know that Trout had an issue last year. It wasn't a back issue, but was a similar thing where, okay, he'll be back any day now, a couple weeks, ended up missing the rest of the season. So Trout said yesterday he's confident he's not going to miss the rest of the season. And that's kind of about all we know. And unfortunately, again, it's not as if he has to rush back to be at a pennant race.
No, the one thing I would say, Bill, is that like this guy, he's so injury prone and has been for a long time. I mean, this contract must, you know, Artie Moreno must be just livid at what's gone on with this franchise and because of the Trout contract.
I don't know about the injury prone. I tend to reserve that for the kind of injuries that keep coming up over and over in the same area. And this especially seems like a rare condition, but you're right. He hasn't played the full complement of games in some time. As far as Artie Moreno being livid, if he should be livid at anyone, it's the people that put together the Angels. Because when you've had Mike Trout for a decade and you haven't won a single playoff game in that time, I don't think the finger of blame should be pointed at, you know, one of the best players ever to play Major League Baseball. It should be pointed at the idea that you can't win with one guy or now with Ohtani with two guys. And, you know, just think of how many other teams say, wow, you start with Trout and Ohtani, you must be pretty good. And
yeah,
like not only are the Angels, you know, not going to get into the playoffs this year, like they're not even close.
Has, I probably should know this, but has Trout spent any time as a DH or have they contemplated moving him to first base at some point? And I'm not even sure whether that would help given the nature of this injury, but have they gone down that road at all?
The DH role isn't an option so long as Ohtani is here. In spring training, when Joe Maddon was still managing the Angels, he said at the very beginning of camp, in answering just a question from a reporter, have you thought about moving Mike Trout to left field? His defensive metrics are not what they once were. Again, you know, get older, maybe lose a little speed. And the Angels had in Brandon Marsh, a young and up-and-coming outfielder who's very, very good defensively. And Maddon said, sure, we thought about it. Because, of course, you talk through everything.
Yeah.
Well, then they talked to Mike Trout about it, which unfortunately was after Joe Maddon said that publicly instead of before. And they came to the agreement that at least this season, Trout would play center, which he has played and has played fairly well. But down the road, certainly moving to a corner outfield, I think would be the first thing you think about.
Yeah.
And Ohtani's contract is up after next year. Most people don't think he's going to stay in Anaheim if the team doesn't win, which, again, it's not. So that, in a weird way, could open up DH.
Want to guess where he goes? Because in any conversation about any player, the Dodgers come into the conversation.
They certainly do, and for good reason. They've done an excellent job, not only in putting a great team on the field, but in managing their payroll. So if you look ahead to their long-term commitments, it's not as if, you know, oh, my God, they've got all these other guys and they can't afford an Ohtani down the road. Right now, they're looking into Juan Soto. That, you know, obviously would be a payroll issue as well. But, you know, where would an Ohtani fit, right? I think – if I had a guess right now, and, you know, we're so far out at just a guess, I'd take my chances with the San Francisco Giants and the Seattle Mariners, as well as the Dodgers, because obviously West Coast teams are a lot closer to home for Japanese players than East Coast players. The Giants and the Mariners both have strong histories with Japanese players. The Dodgers do too. And of course, they never stop winning. Also, you'd want to look at the Mets. They've got plenty of money now with Steve Cohen as the owner. And the guy who's the general manager of the Mets now, Billy Epler, is the guy that recruited Shohei Ohtani to the Angels.
And the fascination about that, Bill, is that you mentioned the Mets, the Giants, and the Dodgers National League teams that now have the DH. So they have that advantage. That was the one disadvantage of trying to get a player like that. If he wasn't pitching or wasn't playing the outfield, he wasn't going to hit for them. Now in the National League, you can have a DH. So it has become a level playing field for a player like Ohtani, hasn't it?
It has. And the thing is, he's athletic enough. He could play Major League outfield every day if he wanted to and if the team wanted him to. So it's not, oh my God, DH or nothing. But obviously you're getting DH at pitching, so you want to keep that as viable as you can. And probably the most effective way to do that is to not have him running around the outfield the other 4 or 5 days of the week.
Right. Speaking of, you talked about Soto. Do you expect Soto to move before Tuesday?
It seems like, you know, I don't have any great inside information, but you know, when there's smoke, there's fire, and everybody knows, and the Nationals know too, that the greatest return you're going to get for a player is if you can do it when the team that gets him is going to have him for the longest amount of time. So if you pick up Soto now, he can impact three pennant races. If you wait and hold on to Soto, which is perfectly defensible because he's such a great player, you might not get as much when you trade for him. I guess the counter argument would be there's only so many teams that can tear up their roster and their farm system in the middle of the season without having the rest of the winter to retool. So maybe you make him the prize of the winter trade market and more teams can get in. But when you look around at the teams that they're talking to now, teams like the Dodgers, the Padres, the Cardinals, there's certainly enough talent in those farm systems and organizations to make it worthwhile that if they want to do the move now, they can. And remember, if they don't do a move for Soto now, the issue doesn't go away. Everybody's going to be asking about Soto until they do something, either sign him to an extension or trade him. And that was actually one of the reasons Mike Trout signed early with the Angels. He said, I don't want to go through, you know, I think it was a year and a half at that time, might have been 2.5 years, but I don't want to go through at least another year and a half of people asking me every day, are you going to sign with the Angels? He was comfortable. He wanted to stay. Obviously, Soto turned down the contract that the Nationals offered, which is totally his right. But it may be in the interest of both parties to, you know, as long as divorce seems to be looming, just get it done.
Well, to that point, this is a rather rare scenario here that I think some people tend to forget. And that is, as a general rule, when you get a player like Soto in this kind of situation, there may be a year left on the deal, but more often than not, it's a rental for the balance of the year. Now, that the team that gets him may sign him, may only take him if they can sign him. But in this scenario, as John and I have discussed on several occasions, you got 2.5 years of this guy without making a longer-term commitment. And I think it bumps up the value of that deal considerably. Don't you agree?
Yeah, I think it should, at least in theory, bring a lot more teams into play. Because as you said, if you don't want to give him $500 million, you don't have to. Just take the 2.5 years and enjoy one of the best players in baseball at a relatively young age. You know, we had the All-Star game out here in L.A., but a couple of days before we had the Futures game. And there were people playing in the Futures game who were older than Juan Soto. He's only 23. Yeah. You don't have to wonder, you know, is he past his prime? I'm pretty safe in saying he is not. Take the 3 years, and I think you're right. Go get him now.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, we obviously spend a significant time talking about the Toronto Blue Jays, who are a team that once again appear capable of contending. And do they have a specific need for Juan Soto, an outfielder? Well, no, but you're not going to turn your back on a guy like this. And to have him for 2 years is right in the wheelhouse of the strength of the Blue Jays organization. And there are other teams that are like that as well.
Sure. And look at, you know, what the Blue Jays face every year in the American League East. You know, if you look good this year, and certainly the last couple of weeks, the Blue Jays have looked good, and you can get into the playoffs and do some damage, why not make your lineup stronger? Maybe it would be better if you could get an ace pitcher, but, you know, the game is about run differential, right? You want to score more runs than the other team. And if you put up an 8 on the board and you give up 6, that's just as good as putting up a 4 on the board and giving up 2.
But that whole concept of a hitter versus pitcher at this time of year, I mean, a team like you mentioned San Diego being in the discussion, and the Dodgers, do they need pitching first, or do they need another fielder, another hitter?
Well, in the case of the Dodgers, definitely pitching would be the priority. But, you know, I mean, if you go up to any general manager and say, do you think you could find a place for Juan Soto in your lineup? I'm pretty sure the answer would be yes. In the case of the Dodgers, for example, you know, they run Cody Bellinger out there in center field, who's an amazing fielder, hasn't really hit for about 3 years now. Maybe you could use Soto and move your outfield around so Mookie Betts plays center field. Your left field situation is a little erratic. They like to mix and match. You could put it like, there's ways to do this. You know, the Padres have had outfield deficiencies all season as far as offense. So he would be more of a natural fit there. I think they would be more likely to want him for the 3 years. And then who knows, because they've already got a lot of money invested in Manny Machado and Fernando Tatis Jr. But again, I can't see any team in baseball that says we couldn't be better with Juan Soto.
I'll find interesting. I think we will all find interesting is if Soto does move, what winds up being the price? How much are you prepared as another team to give up in order to get him? Because you know the ask is going to be high. We could make the argument right now that every team in baseball, with maybe a couple of exceptions, would be interested in Soto. So there will be offers that will be significant, maybe as high or higher than anything we've seen. I'm trying to think of, what do you think is the best offer you've ever seen or the most expensive trade you've ever seen one team make? And it could be whatever it is, it could be broken here, don't you think?
Yeah, and the one thing that gets me is you hear a lot of people saying, well, if the Nationals are going to do this deal, they need to make the Herschel Walker trade.
Yeah.
And for anybody that, has followed American football for a while, that was a huge haul. But half that haul was draft picks, which for the most part, you can't trade in baseball. So it's not really a great comparison. I know people like to talk about the Marlins when they traded Miguel Cabrera at a young age and also Dontrell Willis, who was a very good pitcher at that time. They got six prospects back. And you know what? It didn't help them a whole lot. Kyle Glazer at Baseball America did a great story this week looking at elite players who get traded at relatively young ages, and he filtered out by guys who had MVP votes and such. And says, look, here's the study. Are you going to win the trade if you get Juan Soto? Almost certainly, yes. Are you going to regret trading a package of minor leaguers? I'm sorry. Almost certainly, no.
How to phrase this? I'm trying to get at what you'd consider if you were Washington, given that they are a dismal collection right now, clearly in a rebuild. If there was a package that was headlined perhaps by a 28 to 32-year-old, starting player, even a starting pitcher, should Washington even consider that, given that they are almost inevitably 2, 3, 4 years away from being good? And by that point, that player will not be a significant part of the puzzle.
Oh, exactly. And that's what the Nationals are doing. They're willing to take major leaguers as part of the package, but the buzz phrase in the industry now is young and controllable. So don't give me a guy who might be a really good player right now, but as you said, might be gone by the time the Nationals are relevant again. Give me a guy that's in his first year or second year, doesn't cost me a lot of money now, he can build with the rest of the team, and then give me all your prospects.
That actually brings up a really good question, aside from the Soto trade, is when you look at a team like the Angels, near the bottom, when you look at the Nationals, and I guess the model for the last decade was Houston, is how long does it take you to get back to being a credible team? How much are you prepared to spend to do that? What do you think, Bill?
There was a time in the middle of the last decade where everybody looked at first the Cubs and then the Astros winning the World Series in back-to-back years and said, this is the way to go. Basically tank, right? Make your major league team terrible for 3 or 4 years. And look, you can win a World Series. And too many owners, as we all know, embrace that, not realizing that the number of teams that can win the World Series each year is remaining at one. And most of the time, your rebuilds don't work that well. And the Cubs and the Astros are in big markets, so they can afford to go get the free agents when you're coming toward the end of the rebuild. So it's not a one-size-fits-all thing. And how long it can take, I think, also needs to be coupled with the question of how long can you destroy interest in baseball in your market? Because if you're charging major league ticket prices for a AAA team, a lot of people aren't going to go. And if you don't believe me, check out the Orioles' attendance the last few years. They're finally turning the corner. They've been playing well the past couple months. I believe they're right there for a wild card spot now in the American League.
They are.
So, maybe this is their year, but the last three full seasons, you know, one of them, of course, being the pandemic, but the last three full seasons, they lost more than 100 games. It was awful. And so I think there's a very delicate balance you have to walk about, you know, how efficiently can you rebuild versus how attractive is your product? And I think the really great lab experiment we have for that is in Tampa Bay, where everybody says, if you put a team that wins on the field, people will come. And I think, I know the Rays have issues as far as where their stadium is located, but I think the bottom line issue for the Rays is, unless you have a core of players that fans can identify with and get to know and root for over the course of a couple of years, mm-hmm. you're missing that if you just get rid of those guys. And I think that's as important as attendance is just putting a winning team on the field.
Or maybe a bit more, or maybe Tampa's just not a good baseball market, period. Tampa St. Pete isn't what it should be as a market, period. Then all the other things that you took between the stadium and then the quality of the baseball team. It's amazing that they're still there, really. And I know you're from Montreal, so it's easy for us to sit here and talk about it. But that to me is still the most amazing thing, is that with revenue sharing, Tampa still is allowed to stay there, correct?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. You go to the World Series the All-Star Game. And every year, the day of the All-Star Game, Rob Manfred has a press conference. And every year, somebody raises their hand and asks about what's going on in Tampa Bay. And then somebody else asks about what's going on in Oakland, because those are the two teams that really do need new stadiums. And the answers don't really change much from year to year. We're still waiting, because the best answer, I think, for Major League Baseball, it's certainly for the A's to stay where they are. And there is some progress there. In Tampa, there's really no progress. The A's at least are offering to pay for a stadium. The Rays are not. So why? You got a poorly supported team with an owner who doesn't want to put any money or very little money into a ballpark. I think they should probably be put out of their misery and moved. I'd be happy if it was Montreal, but, you know, Nashville would be just fine too.
Well, and I don't know. I assume you guys have been to the stadium in St. Pete, and it's a crummy stadium.
In a crummy place, a crummy location.
But that's the real key. It's in a crummy location. You know, if the majority of the population, you know, let's say it's in Tampa or Tampa and North, it's an hour minimum. And in traffic, it can be 2 hours just to get to that crummy place. And I wouldn't do it. And I'm not surprised that fans there wouldn't do it. Remember, I don't have to tell you, Billy, that, you know, the problem with the Big O in Montrealers said they didn't want to go there. It was as much the location of the stadium as it was the quality of the stadium. So I don't know how you fix the Tampa Bay situation.
I wonder in the case of Florida, you know, it says build a beautiful new ballpark. Well, the Marlins did that. Now, mm-hmm. granted, the Marlins are terrible, but it certainly didn't solve anything for the Marlins. And I think if you look at the Marlins, at the Rays, and then at the Arizona Diamondbacks, those are the three teams that play in markets where you have spring training, right? So you can see 15 teams, you know, every spring, pick the one you want to go see. Those games sell very well. It may be that everybody in those markets gets what they need from baseball in March, and they don't need bad baseball the rest of the year at higher prices.
You know, but the one difference, though, is that the Rays are consistently a competitive team. Yeah. The other two markets don't have that advantage, and that still doesn't help them in St. Pete. The Benintendi signing by the Yankees, that doesn't eliminate the Yankees from interest in Soto, or does it?
I think given, you know, Juan Soto is Juan Soto, you keep looking at it. But, you know, I don't think somebody would say, well, we have Benintendi, so therefore we're not going to go get Soto.
No.
But if you can use some of the same prospects that you would have used to get Soto in order to get maybe Luis Castillo from the Reds or Frankie Montas from the A's, maybe you think that's a better use of your resources at this very moment.
I know you got to go. We're on a tight schedule, but I wanted to talk to you quickly about the trade deadline. You mentioned a couple pitchers. I assume you think they will be at the top of the food chain before Tuesday?
That's what the industry consensus is, yet teams that are going nowhere and not only are trying to shed payroll, but spent all winter shedding payroll. So, you know, there's no reason not to keep doing it right now. You've dug yourself a big enough hole already. It's not going to get any deeper.
You know, you talked about with rebuilds and the amount of teams that can win the World Series. Is it just a fait accompli that it's Dodgers Mets in the American League? Is something going to change, do you think? And will Tuesday be that changing factor?
I don't know that it's a fait accompli. One of the things that's happened with the new playoff format is you don't have that wild card game anymore where it's one game and you're done. Mm-hmm. So there will be a couple teams to get byes in each league, but otherwise every team gets at least three games. And, you know, as the Atlanta Braves proved last year, I mean, they were an 88 win team. I don't think anyone expected them to win the World Series or even get there. But as you know, the proverb says, if you get hot at the right time, anything can happen.
Billy, we thank you as always for your time. We know you got a busy day ahead of you, so we always appreciate it. And we'll bug you somewhere down the line again. Thanks, Bill.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye. Bill Shaken of the LA Times, back after this. Our thanks to Bill Shaken for joining us, albeit for a brief period of time. I guess he had to go get his pants pressed or something.
I forgot to ask him if he enjoyed the All-Star game, because I keep hearing, and even though the ratings were down for the All-Star game in Los Angeles, that people loved it and that Major League Baseball has done a really good job with pacing things out with the futures game, as he talked about, with the draft on the Sunday night, with the home run derby, and then the game, that people really enjoyed themselves for the 4 days.
Well, we haven't talked about this, and I don't know how many people noticed it or whether you did. The All-Star game was not sold out.
Empty seats at Dodger Stadium?
Yes, sir. Now, they're the cheapest and worst seats in the park. They're the high-level outfield corner seats.
Yeah, sure, yeah. But they were They were empty?
Both for the home run derby and for the game.
Wow. Well, you know, hey, part of that, I would think part of that is a 5 o'clock start. And when you think about it, I mean, that's a, you know, you have to start at 8 o'clock Eastern time and you expect people to be there at 5 o'clock in Los Angeles. That was the one thing that, you know, surprised me a little bit. It has to happen.
You think if it was a usual 7 o'clock LA start or 7:30 that they would have sold those seats?
Yes.
I don't.
No?
I think it was lack of interest.
Yeah.
I don't know how much was that house papered? You can't presume it wasn't papered if you have. And I don't even want to guess how many seats. Maybe as many as 5,000 seats were available. Like, there were multiple sections in each corner that had nobody in them.
Wow. You watched the game more than I did then.
Well, I just happened to notice it. I don't know. There was a shot, and I know of something, whether it was in the home run derby or the game itself.
Yeah.
And I noticed this, you know, they panned across and there was this block of empty seats on Monday night. And then I checked again during the All-Star game, that block was still empty.
I didn't notice that, but I've read lots of stories in the last week about how successful the All-Star festivities for the 4 days were, and that they did a good job with them. So,
okay.
And it wasn't at MajorLeagueBaseball.com. Okay. You know, was it
LADodgers.com?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't at a company or team website. All right. It was a couple of newspapers.
Well, okay. Some guy who got a free ride there enjoyed going to Los Angeles and watching the All-Star game. And there were things about it that were okay. I mean, I watched more of it than I usually do. So whatever that means, but the marketplace wasn't impacted.
Yeah.
They did not sell out. And that's the only place I would expect an All-Star game not to sell out is Atlanta.
Or Tampa.
I'll give you that.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. I think Atlanta has changed a little bit now that they've moved back to the suburbs, now that they've moved their stadium to an area that's more accessible to people as opposed. There are two cities in North America that have the worst traffic congestion in my mind. And you talked about Tampa, St. Pete. But San Francisco and Atlanta, to me, have the worst congestion of major cities in North America. People hate going downtown. I hated going downtown Atlanta when the hockey arena was down there, and even the baseball stadium was down there. It was a pain, an absolute pain. The fact that they've moved out to the suburbs, I think they're in a much better scenario now. So I would give Atlanta the benefit of the doubt of selling.
And just for clarity, I mean, Tampa, it's far. There's traffic at rush hour. But you got to take bridges. You got to take two bridges at least to get to St. Pete from Tampa. And it's a hike.
Yeah.
You know, we used to complain about, remember Richfield, Ohio, that was the first one that I can remember when the Cavs went out there and the hockey team, the Barons.
Yeah, the Barons showed up for 2 years, yeah.
And that was out in the boonies. And then Ottawa was considered out in the boonies with the hockey arena. But, like, people who don't know the Tampa, Clearwater, St. Pete area, it's a hike from Tampa, and especially the northern or eastern suburbs of Tampa, where most of the people are, down to St. Pete. I wouldn't do it. I mean, certainly wouldn't do it regularly. I can't, you know, unless you live like next door to the arena or the stadium, I don't know how you get season ticket holders.
Yeah. No, I know. And the frustration is the other two teams in town, the Buccaneers and the Lightning, who play on the other side of the bay, have done a magnificent job. Like Tampa Lightning hockey is a going concern. They've done a marvelous job with their fan base to grow the fan base, make it accessible, make it fun, easy to get to in downtown Tampa. It's a really, really great environment. And when you think that, for the most part, the Tampa Lightning outdraw the Tampa Rays, that's not normally the case for a hockey team outdrawing a baseball team.
Well, you mean like the
average attendance?
The baseball team plays double the games.
Yeah, double the games, and I don't have the attendance numbers in front of me, but I'll tell you what, they might draw the same amount of fans.
Yeah, it might be close.
You know, when you think that that arena, and you know, in Tampa draws,
but you're making 20,000. My point for me.
Oh no, I would, but hey, Bob. You and I both would have had that franchise in Montreal by now if they had found a way to build a stadium in Montreal.
Yeah,
they should be back in Montreal, period. End of story.
The only thing is Tampa has turned out to be a pretty good sports town after, you know, after a period of time. And, I mean, the great football team does pretty well. Well, but there was a time the football team didn't do well.
Yeah.
There was a time the hockey team didn't do well.
Yeah.
And they got the label of not being a good sports town. And maybe because there were too many transient people that came from somewhere else in the north and moved down to that area. And I don't pretend to know whether that's true or not. But it has now got a reputation as a pretty decent sports town.
Yeah.
And yet that baseball team.
Let me ask you this question.
So if you move the baseball team to the West End, which is what they were talking about doing, there is a Hard Rock Casino on, I think it's I-40. I-40 goes from Tampa to Orlando, I believe.
Yeah, okay.
And
well, I mean, and moving it to that side and closer to Orlando makes a ton more sense anyway.
Well, not because of Orlando, just because the population, the residential population base is more east side and north side.
Right.
And to get there is relatively quick.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
So let me ask you this. You're an old baseball guy. Do you think Major League Baseball made a mistake? Maybe this is a rhetorical question. Do you think baseball made a mistake putting two teams in Florida where spring training is? And it was just a cash grab, a money grab of two cities that were supposed to be better at baseball because of what Florida stood for baseball fans for so many years?
Yeah. I know you believe that the fact that there's spring training there, it plays a big role. I'm not as convinced as you are.
You're not.
No, I'm not denying it, because my experience, I went to spring training with the Blue Jays for a lot of years. My experience is a third maybe were Dunedin residents or people from near there.
Mm-hmm.
The rest were all vacationers.
So they go down for 2 weeks, have a good time, go to the ballpark six times, and life is good.
Yeah. Yeah. You're drawing from your own crowd.
Right.
Who just happened to be there.
Right.
So do people in Tampa not go to Tampa Bay games because the Yankees are there, the Phillies are just down the road, the Blue Jays are there? I don't know if there's anybody else in the Tampa area, but I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah.
Miami, you know, they don't really have – Miami is a terrible sports town. It might be the worst sports town in America right now. Who draws in Miami?
Well, the Heat do when they win.
When they win?
Yeah.
The hockey team doesn't draw.
No, but it's –
the baseball, baseball team doesn't
it's
draw.
On the hockey team lives on the outskirts of the Everglades.
Well, whatever. Whatever the case is.
Yeah.
Even the University of Miami doesn't draw anymore. When they had their great football teams, they drew.
Sure.
But now they don't.
Yeah.
And they don't draw that well for basketball either, University of Miami. So, you know, it's just a – I understand your point.
Yeah.
I'm just not sure it's really relevant because my experience is spring training – draws fans from your home market,
but so just
there on vacation.
But Miami's just a bad sports town,
and I think Miami's a bad sports town.
I mean, well, I'm trying to remember the last time the Dolphins were relevant, but I've seen more orange seats than I have people in those orange seats.
Well,
in a long time.
The Miami Dolphins have been relevant since the Cleveland Browns have been relevant, and virtually every seat is sold. It's the National Football League, and it's Cleveland.
But you don't need – you don't even need to sell seats anymore to make money in the NFL.
Bob. Well, that's I get the, that. But we're talking – that's not what we're discussing. We're discussing the relevance of the market as a sports market and how having Major League Baseball teams in Tampa and Miami are impacted by spring training. And I just don't think it's that much.
Okay. I just to me, that's all. That was always – why would we have a baseball team there when people are able to watch baseball for – the 6 or 7 weeks of spring training. And then, as you well know, well, one has a retractable roof and the other's a dome. I mean, 4 o'clock every 4 o'clock every day in Tampa, you know what's going to happen, right?
Well, yeah, it's going to rain.
It's going to rain.
It's going to rain for 20 minutes or 30 minutes. It does that in Miami too.
Yeah. Yeah.
And other than Saturday and Sunday,
I did enough games in Fort Lauderdale in the old North American Soccer League, Bob, where we would do our pre-production planning, and then the crew at 3:30 would disappear. They'd disappear, and I said, "Where'd the crew go? They're gone to get the plastic." Well, what are you getting the plastic for? Well, you got to put the plastic on the cameras, and then from 4 to 4:30, it'll just torrential rain, and at 4:30. You know, take the plastic off and we'll play the game at 7. Life is good.
It's so interesting. You think Toronto would have got a Major League Baseball team? Well, they got a baseball team without a dome. They didn't have a commitment for the dome, I don't think, when they got the franchise.
I don't think they did, no.
Or 75, whenever it was.
But they got the commitment for the Jays after they made such a great overture to get the Giants out of San Francisco, right? That was really.
But lots of people
listening to this podcast don't understand that.
Well, the issue I was going to suggest or ask about was it a mistake to build the dome? Could Toronto have survived without a roof on the stadium? I mean, I spent those first few years at the old Exhibition Stadium.
I hated going.
I was there for every day. Well, it was a crummy temporary ballpark.
Yeah. But I also hated going to the X too.
So was Jerry Park. You know, people fantasize about a romance about how great Parc Jarry was. It was crummy. It was like a little league park on steroids.
Yes, it was.
You know, hard bench seats and
it was terrible.
It had no romance whatsoever other than there was baseball there. And Exhibition Stadium was the same.
Yes.
But what if instead of building the dome, they had built an open-air stadium? Like how bad really was it in 77, 78, 79 until the dome was built in 89? It's like 10, 11 years we were out there. Wasn't all that bad. And there were a lot of good memories of fogged out games and Here's the, didn't finish till 2 a.m.
The worst thing about the stadium, and you know this more than anything, the worst thing about that stadium for baseball was the turf. The turf was crummy.
Even the turf in the dome in the early days was crummy.
Right, right. That was
now
the worst.
Now it seems pretty good. I don't even notice it.
But have an open air stadium in Toronto, even if it is on the same site as where Rogers Center is, but have grass, that might have been the way to go. That might have been the way to go. Or I have a friend of mine that always wanted to build a stadium at Downsview. And
names will not be mentioned.
No. Anyway, we could have had an outdoor stadium.
That is the best idea I've ever heard.
I don't think so.
Well, no one asked you back then, and with good reason.
Oh, man.
We don't care what you think. We got to take a break. We'll come back with more after these messages. All right, we're back. We've got a short period of time. So I'm going to ask you this question. We're not going to have a conversation about it. Maybe we can do that later. We talked to Bob Ryan the other day about the Mount Rushmore of athletes in Boston. Who would your Mount Rushmore be in Toronto?
In Toronto? Gosh. Okay. You ready? Yeah, Keon.
Okay. Yeah, he'd be on my list.
Dick Shadow.
Possible.
Joe
Carter.
Yeah, has to be.
Funny, because I was thinking of Theismann at that moment after you mentioned Shadow.
And I'm going to throw one at you, totally different.
Okay.
Foster Hewitt.
He's not a broadcaster. He's a broadcaster. He's not an athlete.
Okay. So an athlete. Well, then you have to put Vince Carter.
Would you put a Secretary of State on the real Mount Rushmore? No, it's for presidents.
Okay, Vince Carter. That'll get you thinking.
We'll let people think about that. Yeah. We'll readdress this question at some point later.
Listen, you gave me no warning about this discussion.
No, I get it. I apologize for that. And we don't have time to discuss it. So
okay. Now there's people Googling Dick Shadow.
Yeah, well, they'd have to. For John Shannon, Bob McCowan, maybe see you tomorrow. Goodbye, everybody.